From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area. Coming up, we'll take a rare trip behind the walls of San Quentin to Death Row's most dangerous ward.
Essentially, if they don't assault staff when given the opportunity, they will be disciplined by other inmates here in the facility.
It's called the Adjustment Center.
If you are here in the Adjustment Center, you're not functioning well anywhere else here in this facility. And this is the highest security housing unit that we have here at this facility.
KLW's Nancy Mullane fought for press access where journalists hadn't been for nearly a decade. Today we'll hear what she found.
You don't have access to education
program? I have nothing here. Zip.
Behind the scenes on Death Row, our three-part series begins today on Cross Currents. What is it like to live on death row? It depends on where you are. In California, 727 men and women sentenced to death live in four different places. All 20 women serving death sentences live inside a maximum security housing unit at the Central California Women's Facility, about an hour south of Fresno. All of the men serving death sentences live inside of three separate maximum security housing units at San Quentin State Prison, just east of San Rafael in Marin County. Today, we're going to go inside of the first of these three units with KALW's Nancy Mullane to meet condemned inmates like Carmen Ward.
Living in an adjustment center is tantamount to being on a prolonged punishment with no prospect of ever terminating. I've been here 7 years. Don't even know how or when I'm going to ever leave.
Before we walk the halls of death row, let's look back on the history of capital punishment in California. It started back in 1872 when the government of the new state legalized executions. About two decades later, the state legislature required all executions take place within the walls of one of the state's prisons. The first was on March 3, 1893. 60-year-old Jose Gabriel was killed by hanging for murdering a farming couple near San Diego. In 1972, the state Supreme Court ruled the death penalty was cruel and unusual punishment. As a result, 107 people condemned to death, including Sirhan Sirhan and Charles Manson, had their sentences converted to life in prison with the possibility of parole. Capital punishment was reinstated in California in 1978, and 13 people have been executed since then. Another 63 have died while on death row, including 21 who committed suicide. Conditions in California's highest security prisons have been criticized as too harsh. Last year, more than 1,000 inmates held a hunger strike to protest prolonged isolation, limited access to calendars, paper, no access to visits from family, situations that could lead to mental illness, according to prisoners' rights advocates. The thing is, news media does not have unlimited access to prisons to see what conditions are like. Last month, Governor Jerry Brown vetoed a bill that would have granted that right. So for now, it takes reporters pushing the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitations to get behind prison walls and tell the stories that aren't being told. That's exactly what KALW's Nancy Mullane did, working with the CDCR to get inside of the state's highest security prisons. Today, we'll join her in San Quentin, in a cell block known as the Adjustment Center. It's the first place inmates sentenced to die go, and it's where the most violent condemned prisoners are housed.
The Adjustment Center is a contained, enclosed unit. The staff inside the facility don't have the ability to let themselves out to move freely throughout the rest of the facility. When they come to work every day, they're locked into prison with 102 of the most dangerous convicted felons that we have here in the state of California.
And that's the Adjustment Center.
And that is the Adjustment Center.
That's Lieutenant Sam Robinson, San Quentin's public information officer, and Nancy Mullane's guide as she enters death row. We'll join them now.
All right, and just check your bag.
So the officer is opening my bag, kind of checking to see what's inside of it.
She got cameras, cool?
Yeah, she's media. She's allowed to have a camera.
And can you
Lieutenant Sam Robinson vouches for my press credentials and my equipment.
They're just a battery.
All right.
All right, thank you. And, oh, you're going to wand me first?
Okay.
All right, and you give me a stamp.
After I'm processed, Robinson pulls open the gate to the Sally port. We step inside, and he pulls the gate closed behind us with an ear-popping clunk.
They separate the environment. Now I'm going to flash my ID to a man sitting behind bulletproof glass, I believe. One side is closed, now the other side is open.
Officers leaving the inmate side of the prison at the end of their shift wait on the far side of the second lock gate. When the gate is remotely opened, we pass one another in the middle.
Hey, can I sing in that thing? Oh, that's okay.
Stepping out of the Sally Port, we walk through a courtyard towards a long, off-white, three-story building with barred windows.
So we are now going into the Adjustment Center.
Facing door!
After a few more checkpoints, we enter a wide hallway. Aside from an empty holding cell midway down the hall, there are no cell blocks or tiers in sight. Like a hospital emergency room, the air is nervous, tense. A guard with stripes on his sleeve hands me a green security vest.
What kind of vest is this, Sam?
This is a stab-proof vest.
Oh.
And so what it's designed to do is to prevent individuals from utilizing sharp objects and puncturing you. Inside of prison, we're not necessarily worried a whole lot about people shooting at us. We're more worried about inmates having little crude items that they've manufactured to stab us or puncture us with. And so this vest here protects all of your vital organs.
So this will just protect me from somebody stabbing me.
Exactly.
But they could still get my neck or something.
That's a small area to protect as opposed to everything else. Now here in the sergeant's office here, we have what we call our board, which identifies every individual who's here in the Adjustment Center. Some of the most infamous individuals on death row here in the state of California reside here in the Adjustment Center, in addition to a number of individuals who are death row inmates who are prison gang members. And so they're members of groups such as the Aryan Brotherhood, the Mexican Mafia, the Nazi Lowriders, the Nuestra Familia, and the Black Guerrilla Family, in addition to some street gangs or what we identify as disruptive groups, the Bloods, Crips, Southerners, and Norteños, individuals who have been here in our condemned population, in our prison as a whole, who have committed violent acts against other individuals here at this facility that we house in the most secure operations that we have here at San Quentin. And so here in the Adjustment Center, every inmate, when they exit their cell, they are escorted by two staff members wherever in handcuffs wherever they go throughout this facility. There are some guys in here, however, who rate more additional security protocols, and that you'll see on the board here. There are little tags that identify leg restraints, which means that we don't allow that individual to exit the cell without being restrained in leg restraints as we move them throughout the facility also. Because just because a guy is handcuffed and is escorted by two staff members here in the facility, it doesn't negate them from acting out violently, such as kicking our staff. There's actually one individual in here. This individual was identified in cell 1AC4. Over the course of the last couple of decades, he've actually successfully retired four of our staff members here in this facility due to assaults that he's perpetrated on them. Those individuals were assaulted to the point that their injuries were extremely severe, and they were never, ever able to return to duty.
Up on the wall, individual headshots of all 102 inmates in the Adjustment Center are arranged in lineup fashion according to the number of their cell. Some of the photographs have colored tags.
Is every single person in here on condemned?
The cards that are identified are colored yellow.
Uh-huh.
The ones that are colored yellow are condemned. The ones that are white are administrative segregation.
That means they aren't condemned, but are considered too violent to be incarcerated in the prison's general population.
If you are here in the Adjustment Center, you're not functioning well anywhere else here in this facility. And this is the highest security housing unit that we have here at this facility.
Unlike in some of the state's more modern high security units, the Adjustment Center does not provide gun coverage for officers who walk past the cells.
And so when our staff members, when they walk down the tier here and you make a mistake, there is no eye in the sky, so to say, protecting you if that inmate gets loose and attempts to assault you. Essentially, who you rely on and what you rely on is your partner that's on the tier with you. And so every day when you, I equate working in the Adjustment Center to being an athlete. in that when you're up to bat or that ball is hiked or whatever the case may be, you can't take a down off or you can't be spaced out when that pitch is coming at you. That you have to be honed in and on your A game when you go down a tier because in this facility, the inmates operate under what we say is a green light, which is that's always a go in here to assault staff. Essentially, if they don't assault staff when given the opportunity, they will be disciplined by other inmates here in the facility.
How do you know that?
The way we know that is by individuals who have successfully worked their way out of the adjustment center. We get intel from people, and many of them have expressed to us time and time again that, hey, I'm glad I got the opportunity to get out of there because, you know, I didn't want to do this or whatever the case may be. But when you're in the adjustment center, if you want to live amongst the population, you have to do as the population order or dictate that you do.
The adjustment center opened in 1960. Instead of having cell doors that open remotely, like the state's more modern prisons, the solid cement cell doors here have to be opened by an officer with a key. Robinson says that makes officer safety a concern and communication between inmates difficult.
Individuals are able to yell out onto the tier. Many times our staff may observe down a tier what we call fish lines shooting out from up under the cells, going down to another cell, and that's another way they're communicating by passing along letters or even weapons in some cases.
I stand in the middle of the office and scan the room. There are walkie-talkies and clipboards. The top sheet of one says hunger strikers in big block letters.
When an individual is on hunger strike here in the facility, we are required by our own protocols to document each shift, what his activities are, whether he ate that day and if he didn't eat, what his statements were. We essentially document everything that goes on with that individual's activities.
So there's no hunger strikers right now?
Not here in the adjustment center, no.
You're listening to KALW's Nancy Mullane as she tours the adjustment center, one of three cell blocks holding inmates condemned to die at San Quentin State Prison. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. You just heard Nancy and her guide, Lieutenant Sam Robinson, discussing hunger strikers on death row. There were none when she toured earlier this year, but as late as last week, there were two protesting prisoner treatment in state penitentiaries. Lieutenant Sam Robinson says those hunger strikes are over now. Prison advocates say higher security units in California's prison system treat inmates inhumanely, leaving them in conditions amounting to solitary confinement for unhealthy periods of time. For example, inmates in the adjustment center spend all of their time in solitary confinement, except for 9 hours a week when they're allowed to walk alone in an outdoor cage. Some, they say, experience little human contact for decades. Nancy wanted to see firsthand, so she worked to convince prison authorities that they should give her access behind prison walls. We'll rejoin Nancy and Lieutenant Robinson now inside a part of San Quentin's death row known as the Adjustment Center. I ask Robinson what kind of attitude it takes to work in a place like this.
I worked here in the Adjustment Center for 3 years as a supervisor. I was in here 5 days a week, and I'm an African-American male. And so it seemed like I would be offended by someone throwing out the N-word to me on a regular basis, right? I mean, you know, it seemed like I would have some type of sensibility about that. But working here in the Adjustment Center, it just goes right over my head. Right. I mean, I've been called so much here in this facility that it's like saying blue or orange or whatever the case may be. It has no value or no meaning to it. Every day when you're going down the tier, you know, it's the somebody in here is going to challenge you about something.
Robinson says when he worked in the center, the cell doors were just bars, and the inmates would gas the officers by throwing feces and urine on them. But in 2004, prison officials made that impossible.
It was drama here in the facility. We've changed the physical structure in here in that we've removed all of this bar fronts and replace them with solid concrete cell fronts. And so the front of the cell is concrete, the sliding door in front of the cell is concrete, and so that's prevented the individuals from committing those assaults of gassings and darting our staff here in the facility.
Robinson says that doesn't mean there aren't attacks. In August, two officers in the unit were stabbed repeatedly by an inmate with a crude knife. They were rushed to a local hospital for treatment, but have since returned to duty.
If our staff members aren't paying attention, if you have someone that's a seasoned cop in here, if they're not honed into their environment, if you slip up, they may try to grab your hand as you're trying to handcuff you and pull you inside the cell. And as they pull you inside, you never know what's on the opposite side of that wall there and could be subject to being slashed or cut or even having your arm broken or whatever the case may be.
Before we leave the Adjustment Center's office, I talk with Sergeant Paul Taylor. Today, he's in charge of the unit. I wonder about his life outside San Quentin. I ask him if he's married and whether he has a family. He hesitates. Officers aren't supposed to share information about their private lives. Yes, he says, he does.
Do they understand the risk you're taking?
I think so, yeah.
Do you feel it, or is it just something that kind of waves over you every once in a while that you realize, oh, I'm working in this rather secured facility?
Well, I took on this profession before I had a family, so, I mean, they do understand. You know, my kids understand I work in a bad place with bad people. People that work here is doing good for society.
Outside the office, Robinson and I walk down a short hall. A dozen green puncture-proof vests hang on hooks, ready to grab.
Before we get to the extraction equipment, I want to take her out to that sally port back there.
Okay.
And give her an idea of what the yard looks like.
Okay.
One south side of the Adjustment Center, just outside the sally port. There are three levels of tiers here in this facility, and they're all identical to this. But you mentioned earlier, how are people able to communicate with each other?
I can hear
as
them.
We are just standing here, and we are maybe 15 feet away from the nearest cell. Just standing here, you're able to kind of listen down a tier how people are communicating easily back and forth here, even through those solid doors.
Can I record?
Sure.
I stand alone, listen, and watch. Down the empty hall, I see a white envelope on a clear line of filament slide out from under one of the solid cell doors. It sits there for a moment, then another white envelope attached to another line shoots out and over the first. They look like they're moving all on their own. While I'm watching the envelope slide up and down the floor of the tier, Robinson walks up.
The fishing, yeah. I'll let the facility or the staff here in the facility know who fished what to where, and I'm sure they'll go inside and they'll follow up by doing a secure search of that cell just to ensure that there's nothing dangerous inside of there. And maybe we may be able to gather some intel also if they're passing along gang secrets.
By now, there are five envelopes sliding along the smooth gray cement floor.
Plenty of practice.
So how do they do it? They put it on a string.
Put it on a string, slide it underneath a little sliver under their door, which is less than a half of an inch.
But how did, I mean, that was way down there. That must have been six cells down.
Exactly.
And then, but how does he get it to come all the way down here? I don't understand how they do that. How did he get it all the way down here?
With momentum and inertia, he's able to get it going in one direction. He may get some help from someone in the cell next to him, and they just keep moving it down the facility.
Robinson turns from the tier and waves Taylor over.
Hey, Paul, somebody just fished something to cell 52.
So will they go in and clear out the cell or try
exactly.
to find it?
Exactly.
In seconds, a team of six officers appears. Canisters of pepper spray and handcuffs hang from their thick belts. As they prepare to enter the tier, the officers place dark protective glasses over their eyes and disposable gloves on their hands. As the first black steel gate slides back, Robinson orders me to turn and follow him out of the area.
Can I watch? Let me watch. I mean, I want to see what happens. No?
I'm not allowed. Officers direct me out a back door to a yard of cages. There, Robinson stops to explain what's happening.
Essentially, what's just taken place is we observed inmates receiving contraband because anything that they send down a tier on a fish line is considered contraband. If it leaves their cell, headed to another individual, it's illegal here inside the facility. And so we observed them committing an illegal act here in the facility. I don't believe that was what was fished down to the other individual was something that was harmless, so to say. It probably had some type of gang entail. It could have been, you know, who is no good inside of here, meaning that there may be some individuals who were targeted for assault. I mean, you just never know what was on those items that was retrieved from that cell. And so essentially our staff has went down a tier to remove that individual from his cell.
Why can't I witness that treatment?
Well, because as you can see, the facility, the physical structure of the Adjustment Center, there's not a lot of space in here. And if things go sideways inside of there, you and I would just really be in the way. There was nothing that we could do.
Had to move that inmate out of that environment.
Well, they are moving the inmate out of his cell.
Oh, they are?
Because they have to go inside and search the cell.
Would they hold him outside in that open area?
They would either hold him outside in the open area, or they may bring him to the center holding cell that we walk past here in the facility.
Would he resist that?
You never know. You never know. And if we walk through Sallyport, he knows he's in trouble because our staff, we've just four officers, have just went down to a cell unannounced at a time that staff aren't normally on the tier. Then if he comes out and you and I are there, you know, you could be subject. There is no shield that's around him. There is no solid door that's in front of him. He could spit on you or I or, you know, kick or whatever the case may be. So for your own protection and for my protection, because I'm not all geared up other than my vest today, as you are, it's just best that we be removed from that and allow the staff on the tier to do what they need to do.
You're listening to KALW's Nancy Mullane tour one of three death row cell blocks at San Quentin State Prison. She's inside of the most secure unit, known as the Adjustment Center. It's where the most violent inmates await execution. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan, and you can hear this and other stories from our series going behind the scenes of California's highest security prisons at our website. It's kalw.org. And now let's return to Nancy Mullane and Lieutenant Sam Robinson as they go deeper into the Adjustment Center and witness the day-to-day life of the men who live on death row. We'll meet one of them face-to-face. Peering out through security fencing, I see two sorts of recreation yards.
These individuals are allowed out three times a week, and they're allowed out for 3 hours each time. Otherwise, they're confined to their cells.
Can I walk through there?
No, we're not going to walk through there, because again, it's just you and I out
here. This is locked.
This is locked. Yeah, this is locked.
On the far side, a dozen inmates are shooting hoops in one of two group yards, each the size of a basketball court. Guards armed with rifles observe from a walkway above. A little closer are 32 walk-alone yards. They're cages the size of small living rooms. Inside each cage, a single inmate dressed in white boxer shorts and T-shirt stands or sits alone. Robinson says these yards are for inmates who either can't get along with others or have been violent on the group yard. It's a hot day, and there's no shade. Robinson says it doesn't matter to the inmates.
Whether it be sunny skies out here or there be rain, and I believe if we had snow here at San Quentin, this yard always runs. These guys always come out and take advantage of their time out here.
We head back into the Adjustment Center. By now, the officers have finished removing the inmate who was suspected of phishing from his cell. They've searched it for the illegal message. One of the officers checks in with Robinson on which cells were involved.
5-7.
At this point, I'm hoping to see inside a cell in the Adjustment Center. It was one of the conditions I'd requested as part of my press access to the facility. After all, it's been nearly a decade since any reporter has seen inside a cell in the Adjustment Center. But as I press the officers to let me inside of just one empty cell so that I can accurately describe the condition, Robinson says, absolutely not.
I understand your concerns, but again, we have security concerns in here relative to allowing, you know, people who are not peace officers down the tier here in the Adjustment Center. It's not about something bad happening on the tier that we're on, because we have the staff who are here with us. It's about something happening else here in the facility, and again, losing those precious response seconds for our staff to get there.
You don't have one empty cell.
we may have empty cells, but you and I just can't go down to tier ourselves. It takes these officers to escort us down
here.
The tier. I'll give you access, and I'll give you access by whoever, who's coming in first? Is walking on yards? As one of the guys are coming in from the yard, we'll put somebody in a holding cell and let you interview them.
Yeah. Actually, do me a favor. As you bring the guy in, whoever it may be, just bring them over here real quick. You want to ask him if they want to talk first? All I got is, Ask him.
A group of officers holding steel batons and wearing protective sunglasses pass through the back sally port and approach the inmates in the standalone cages. While the officers watch from outside the cages, the inmates take off their T-shirts and boxer shorts and one by one bend over to be strip-searched. After that, they get dressed and shove their hands through a small slot in the gate to be handcuffed. An officer opens the gate to the cage and, holding tight to an inmate's elbow, escorts him toward the center.
All your movement has to be purposeful in here. Everything they do is within the scope of their training. And so all their movement, the stances they take as they're holding the individuals, it's all part of the training to make sure that you have the advantage when you're next to an individual who you don't know what his intentions are.
It's the same. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. It never changes. And that's the way it's trained in here.
When it changes, that's when the inmate has an opportunity to take advantage of you. And so that's why you see the movement being as purposeful as it is.
As promised, Robinson allows me to stand nearby. An officer hands me a face shield to put over my eyes.
When contact with the inmates,
sure.
Wear a face shield.
As the officers transport the inmates back to their cells, they pause in front of me and ask if the inmates would like to be interviewed. After a few moments, each inmate turns away.
In comes the next inmate.
Here we go. You want to talk to the press?
Sergeant Taylor is standing nearby.
Each of them told you, I can't.
What does that mean to you?
It's a part of the process. They just can't do it.
Why?
They have to deal with the folks on the yard.
You mean if they talk to me, then they go out in the yard and then something's going to happen?
Who knows? But that's just their own code.
As we're talking, one inmate agrees to be interviewed.
Sure?
Yeah.
You want to talk to the press?
What's going on?
I'm a member of the press. Would you be willing to talk to me about your life?
Yeah.
I follow the tall, lean, handcuffed man as he is led down the hall by an officer holding tight to his elbow, another officer leading the way, Sergeant Taylor monitoring the situation. The inmate, Carmen Ward, is placed inside the black holding cell in the hallway. His handcuffs stay on. Robinson tells me Ward was sent to death row in 1991 for the 1987 gang-related shooting of a 15-year-old and the attempted murder of a 21-year-old. Then in 2005, just before the execution of Stanley Tookie Williams, Robinson says Ward and about a dozen other inmates on death row threatened to kill staff in the prison as retribution. They were moved to the Adjustment Center, where Ward remains today. I lift my microphone high up on the side of the holding cell and ask Ward about his life inside the center.
Conditions here in the Adjustment Center are horrendous, unfair, biased.
What's it like every day? What kind of food? What's the food like?
Prison food. I mean, I've been here for 22 years, mm-hmm. and the food is pretty much running a mill.
Mm-hmm. So Thursday is?
Thursday is SOS, potatoes, and a biscuit.
What's SOS? Oh.
Gravy with meat.
And Tuesday?
Tuesday will be waffles. Waffles with some eggs, scrambled eggs.
What would you like people to know about your environment that they don't know? They think it's about what it's like on television, living in the Adjustment Center.
Living in the Adjustment Center is tantamount to being on a prolonged punishment with no prospect of ever terminating. I've been here 7 years, don't even know how or when I'm going to ever leave.
But a lot of people think that prison is punishment.
Punishment is punishment.
But how is Adjustment Center different from other kinds of imprisonment?
It is restricted in everything you do. Everything. The reception of a magazine is predicated on receiving one to give one.
So you have a magazine, you have to turn it in to get another one.
Traipsing around this building, I must wear these shoes. Nobody's ever explained why. In the rain, through puddles.
Ward is wearing white bottom sandals with black crisscross over his instep.
What the Adjustment Center is for is for a brief punishment, right? Prison is violent, I get that. But at some point, there has to be some fairness. People have to be told when their punishment ends.
He says living in the Adjustment Center is being on death row without the opportunities given to inmates in the prison's other two condemned units.
East Block, you have access at educational programs.
You don't have access to education programs?
I have nothing here. Zip. You don't even have a library program here. There's a brand new library built in the San Quentin. We're not even allowed access to it. Bring some fairness in here. Bring some fairness. There is a process and a system called a 608. It doesn't even apply to
us. What's a 608?
What's 608, Robinson?
What the condemned have access to, their movement throughout the facility.
And it also has an assessment chart for how long you have to stay here.
And you've been here for?
7 years, and I don't even know when I'm going to leave. And I'm not the only one. No one knows when we're going to leave.
You don't know what the process is to get out?
No, there are rules, but the rules don't apply to us. There's a 608 that says that for certain rules violations, you have to stay for a designated amount of time. Right? Now they're telling us, hey, you just have to stay.
Have you tried?
Yes, I've tried everything. I've written it up. But I've exceeded the time that for the most horrendous crimes here. You have 102 cells here. There are close to 80 people who the 608 doesn't even apply to. No one has ever said why. Good time means nothing. Means absolutely nothing. There aren't even any criterions that we have to reach to leave.
Robinson says there's a process for Ward to follow to get released from the center, but so far he hasn't followed that procedure. As I step out of the Adjustment Center's cage sallyport and into the prison's general population, where inmates are walking around, heading to work or canteen, I take a deep breath. There's prison, and there's places like the Adjustment Center. I still don't know what a cell inside the center looks like, how big it is, and how it feels to be inside one. I do know it's not a place anyone ever wants to go. In San Quentin State Prison, I'm Nancy Mullane for Cross Currents. Next week, we'll go with Nancy inside of the largest of San Quentin's three death rows. It's called East Block, and it's where 537 condemned men live in single cells 23 hours a day.
I mean, I look at it like this. If you close the schools, then you're going to have people commit crimes because they're not going to have no education. So it's like, you know, it's defeating the whole purpose. Kids need education. You know what I mean? I don't want to see nobody here.
That's next Monday on Cross Currents. Our show is made possible because of support from listeners like you. Today's team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Chris Hoff, RTM's Kunahoffs, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Moo, Lisa Ratner, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel with help from Eva Sonsang. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Also, thanks to City Car Share for providing an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll drop in on a very visible protest of Citizens United, and we'll hear about the first negative campaign advertisement which brought down California gubernatorial hopeful Upton Sinclair.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am the inquiring cameraman. All day I travel around California, the highways and the byways, the downtown districts, the residence districts, the factory districts, all for the purpose of digging out voters of California to express their views for your edification. Remember, they're not actors, they're nervous. I don't rehearse them, I'm impartial.
What Whitaker and Baxter did was to create a series of phony news films so that people who went to the movie saw these and assumed that this was actual news rather than something that had been filmed on a studio lot.
The original smear campaign, tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. And today is the last day to register to vote. You have until midnight, and for the first time ever, you can also register online. You'll find details at klw.org. When you think of bluegrass music, you probably think more of wooden cabins than of presidential yachts. But on Thursday, the Kathy Kallick Band has a show planned on the Potomac, a yacht built for President Franklin Roosevelt and now harbored at Jack London Square in Oakland. The concert is part of the Pickin' on the Potomac music series. Tours of the ship begin at 6:30, and the music starts about an hour later. All that information is at klw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.